Good morning and welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor and two wonderful guests today. But before we get into that, Lee.
Yes, Amy. What would you like to talk about?
We have an event tonight.
That's right. Fast Pitch Online event at Eclipse de Luna at Perimeter.
Yes.
I've gotten a lot of emails saying the one in Perimeter or the one in Buckhead.
I thought it was very clear on the website.
I thought so too.
Maybe not.
And
so
you know what's at Eclipse de Luna? Tapas.
Lots of tapas.
You
not
like tapas?
To be confused with topless. I see the doctor over there. Yes, not
topless.
To be confused with topless.
Maybe we'd have a bigger crowd.
Maybe we would. I'm expecting a big crowd.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. So Aflac introduced a new cancer policy on Monday.
Really?
Brand new cancer policy. Yeah.
And what's it about?
It's covering lots of medications that are not yet FDA approved. How cool is that? So experimental treatment, so if you're risking infertility, covering vaccinations.
Wow.
Yes.
They're always on the cutting edge of that stuff.
Definitely on the cutting edge. Definitely.
Well, that sounds great.
Lee, anything else going on in Atlanta?
Any big news for you? I went to Taste of Atlanta. I know you're involved in Taste of Dunwoody.
Yes. I didn't get to the Taste of Atlanta. How is it at Atlantic Station?
It was fantastic.
What was your favorite dish?
These mini Kobe burgers from General HSU. I don't know how to pronounce it.
General HSU.
Sue. Yeah, I don't know.
Sal?
Okay.
General Sal.
Sounds good.
Where is that?
It was in Atlantic Station.
I know the Taste of Atlanta
was. That's where
but
the restaurant was also.
Okay. I have to
they
check
had
that
like,
out.
I would say like 70 something restaurants at least.
I missed
and
that.
They had a good rib place, Jim and Nick's.
Oh, they're really good.
Yes.
I met the lady that founded that.
Yes.
At
very,
a chamber
there's a bunch
meeting.
Of them. There's a.
Yeah.
They're all over the country. And it was unbelievable. We got free VIP passes. So we had like 60 food coupons.
What? Because you're the fat guy?
Well, you know, I am the fat guy.
Did Dr. Fitness go with you?
He did not. He wouldn't eat anything there. Mm. But we couldn't even eat all of the food. We had to give away our coupons at the end.
You should have invited me.
I thought you'd be there. I thought you'd be scoping them out to get little pointers.
No.
How many people go to Taste of Dunwoody?
We have to max it out at 500.
How many restaurants?
35. That's all the space we have. 35.
Where is it held at?
The W Hotel. February 1st.
You working on that?
Oh, yeah. Working on it. Working away.
Is it hard to get 35, or you got to limit, you got to
yeah,
turn
we,
people away?
We have to turn people away. So we have to do the tasting to, you know, invite people
when
back.
Do I get on that list?
You can be on the list.
I want to be on the list.
The official taster list. Andy, maybe Andy wants to be on the list.
I'll be on the list.
That's
I
right.
mean, Lee's really not the fat guy in the room here. That's all there is to it.
Don't take my... I have job security, so...
Yeah, it's
so
yeah.
why don't we get Andy on and start the show? What do you say?
I would love that.
All right. Andy Greider, my co-host in Uniqueness and Power, had began his radio career at Penn State, where he studied journalism. After trying on sports medicine... And trying on a bunch of other things, I'm sure, that we're not going to get into right now.
Yeah, it's a public radio show.
That's right. After leaving there, he spent some time in England with the BBC and Grenada.
Granada.
Granada, the country.
Granada
or the,
Television.
So the television. That sounds good.
Well, I didn't invade Granada, but I sort of did.
I've been there, so I didn't see you.
No. It's a small island, too.
I know. You went to Worldwide TV News in New York City. You did a bunch of stuff. Then you came here to Atlanta. I don't know why. Why was that?
Left turn in Albuquerque.
Came to Atlanta. And now you're here with working as a marketing business consultant, doing all kinds of great things.
And having a lot of fun.
I was anxious to meet Andy for the first time because someone referred to him as the Tasmanian devil of networking and a business owner's Clark Howard.
Somebody was being really nice.
So I bet that's on your website now.
It is on my website now, actually.
Yeah.
Yes, and
there's one that
we left off just because it was a little edgy, but there's a lot of fun accolades that have come out of this.
So Andy, how long have you been in Atlanta?
Been in Atlanta almost 15 years now, and long enough to know better.
So how'd you get here? What was the story?
Well, I took a transfer with AT&T. I came out of a dicey relationship up in Pennsylvania, decided that it was time to get out of the say anything mode of throwing the radio out the window every time I saw something that reminded me of the woman I was dating, and said it was either Atlanta or San Francisco. And I had friends in both places. I got a transfer with AT&T, who I worked with, to either one, and took the transfer and the bonus to come down here, and was here for 5 days, and they closed the small business centers.
Wow.
Ooh, that's not good.
I was just finished unpacking when they closed the small business centers.
And so then you became what?
I went through a sort of liturgy of a bunch of small, weird jobs, kind of in that early midlife crisis mode. I managed a warehouse. I worked with a dot-com for 5 years that we did a lot of different things. I mean, I did everything from writing web copy and doing business deals to help close a mine deal out in northwest Arizona with the Morenci Mine, to driving CDL truck across the country.
So, but by being in all those variety of businesses probably helped you in your business consulting now, because you've touched so many different industries. You see how they operate, and you see the similarities and differences. And stuff.
I've owned a few small businesses. I've been a part of a lot of medium-sized businesses, and able to really understand what the growth pains are like. I mean, to me, owning a small business, one of the most revealing stats I ever heard is 800,000 small businesses are going to open this year in the United States alone. And out of that, you have actually a better chance of keeping your business – I'm sorry, you have a better chance of winning 5 bullet and out of a 6 bullet gun, Russian roulette, than your business staying open 2 years.
Wow.
It's a pretty scary thought. And most of us aren't going to pick up a gun and play Russian roulette. But
not a good idea.
A lot of people are going to open businesses.
Right.
So,
why do you think that so many businesses fail?
I think there's a lot of reasons. But
any
common
threads?
Yeah, I think there's a couple really common threads. I think that people get into things without understanding what really needs to be done. They've got a great idea, or they see somebody else doing something that they think they can do, and they get into it. They don't have the business plan or the marketing plan in place. They also don't realize that every penny counts. They don't know where to turn when things get bad. They don't know about things like factoring. They don't know about, when the bank says no to them, they're crushed and they crawl into their hole and they start piling everything up on credit card debts.
Right.
They don't know about companies that can save them bottom line money to start, which is part of the focus of what we do on Uniqueness is Power.
Right.
So that's what we see there. And like I said, my goal is to slightly reverse those odds. They're not far away. I hope by the time the show's done and by the time a lot of people have gotten a chance to listen to it and understand what we do, and we can work with them directly, we can be in a position to say that now you do have a better chance about running a small business for 2 years than winning at Russian roulette.
That's right.
So that's the goal.
What is it you do?
He helps small business people.
Well, I was going to say smallest, medium-sized business people. I position myself more as a problem solver than anything else, Amy. I believe very, very strongly in being able to leverage the network I have, being able to leverage the solution points that I can bring to the table for a client. It can be anything from marketing and technology, which is probably where my strengths lie, to anything including HR and logistics and things along those lines, where there's a lot of problems for businesses that they'll call and say, I need to rebrand, but they don't know why.
How do you market that?
Very carefully. We're just starting to do that now, and it's a lot of word of mouth. It's a lot of people having seen what I do for a client, and it's picking up referrals from that client going forward. It's a tough thing to describe, because what'll happen in 90 minutes is I can sit down with somebody and talk to them and find out where the pain is versus where they think the pain is, and then be able to start to address what might actually be the problem and what some viable, if somewhat unorthodox solutions might be.
What are the best size companies that you like working with?
I can work with startups. Usually they have to have a realistic expectation of what it takes to move the needle, however, and a lot of times startups don't, so I'll throw that out there. But anyone who's in a small to medium-sized business, and that's not in the Dun & Bradstreet version of it, that's in the Real America version of it, it's probably 80% of the businesses that are out there I can work with.
And what kind of sales do they need in order to engage with you?
It's still a moving target there, Lee. I think what we're generally looking at is a capability versus needs. We could be looking at retainers that run anywhere between $2,000 or $3,000 a month on up, and there's also media expenses and things like that.
Right.
So it's a company that can afford that kind of opening engagement. A lot of times what I'll try to do is I'll try to set up a 3 to 6 month pilot to give them a good taste of what's coming.
So you think you can get results in that period of time?
I can get enough results to baseline things for them to know what's coming. I'd much prefer to have a 9 month gestation period,
right,
of sorts, to let the thing run. But at the same time, it's not necessarily going to work for the company every time. There's a couple companies. I mean, I'm working with a factoring company right now. I'm working with a finance company right now. And I'm about ready to start working with a company that does internet marketing, and we'll be working with them in large part to help promote their product. So
I understand you're writing a couple books. Can you tell us about that?
I have a couple e-books in the works that will be coming up on the Uniqueness is Power website as soon as that is fully redone. Those are going to be on simple things like 13 tips to market your business and 25 things that you need to know about small business before you get into it, things along those lines. But I also have a book that I'm writing from when I was out on Grateful Dead tour. It's called Tales from the Lot, and it is a sort of a taking liberty with a lot of old memories and kind of morphing 150 people I knew into each one character and telling a story that is real but isn't real all at the same time.
Is it a novel or is it a bunch of stories?
It's a novel. And it's about halfway done at this point. I haven't had a whole lot of time to work on it. I got the summer on vacation. I got a week where I got to knock out four or five chapters, but it's slowly morphing along. And I'm pretty happy with where it's at, but it's not ready to go yet.
Well, Andy, we're looking forward to the book, looking forward to keeping up with your career. What is the best way for someone to contact you?
The absolute best way to get hold of me is probably by cell phone, 404-516-4204, if you want to talk to me personally. Otherwise, Google me. It's Andy, A-N-D-Y, Greider, G-R-E-I-D-E-R. And at the very, very top of Google, you will see a link to a QLES profile that has all my contact information as well as every bit of information you could possibly want about background on me.
That's the number one?
Number one link every time Google and Yahoo. You can either Google me or Yahoo me, and you will find me at the top every time.
Andy, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much for having me. I mean, this has been a pleasure.
Next up, Peter Barron. He's the founder and principal of Carabiner Communications. With nearly two decades of technology and marketing experience, he's directed some major campaigns with clients such as Apple Computer, Motorola, IBM. It is a pleasure to introduce Peter. His work spans the formative years of really the PC industry all the way to today's internet-driven wireless and mobile device markets. Welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Peter Barron, how did you get to Atlanta?
Via a short stint in New York. After I graduated from college at the University of Utah, I went to the big city, decided that a job on Madison Avenue was probably a great way to start a career.
Just like all the other Utah people, right?
I imagine they have to get out of there somehow. I asked him from England originally, so Utah was kind of a short stint for me. I wasn't aware there was that much snow here in the United States. But New York was a great experience for me, but I had a small family and realized that commuting 2 hours a day was probably not a great way to build lasting relationships with my little children, so I decided I need a little better commute and moved to Atlanta. And then, of course, slowly over the years, the Atlanta commute has gotten
worse than New York.
Mm. Worse than New York, probably.
Oh, I can't believe that.
So yeah. did that come into play when you were coming up with your company? Because I know your company is not a typical big box PR firm.
Absolutely. Early in my career, of course, got into traffic and drove downtown for many years. One of the things I realized when we sold my last firm to Hill & Knowlton in New York, worked for them for 4 years under contract, and those were during some very difficult times for the high-tech business. We were generating a couple $1 million a year in revenue, but still weren't generating a profit because we were spending $15,000 a month on rent, big salaries. It was just very difficult, and I realized I had sort of an epiphany one day, and I thought, there's no way that this needs to continue. You should be able to make money, at least a profit on this kind of revenue. And I decided that it was really the structure, the way agencies are traditionally set up with the overhead that they have. All of the profit, all of the revenue goes to sort of supporting that. So when I started Carabiner, we developed a new business model. We actually call it a hybrid model. If you sort of picture in your mind a donut, which, as we know, is kind of a vegetable, right?
Yes.
Center
it's
of
in the nut family.
I think it
that's
is.
That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it.
The nut family.
Okay. Yeah.
Better the nut than the bark family.
Donut, you know, counts for me.
Donut, yeah, I like that.
Okay, so share with us the donut.
Well,
you
picture,
the hole.
Yeah, the hole is the sort of center.
Is that you?
Two engines.
You the hole?
I'm in the middle. And it's traditional full-time employees, but a small structure that supports, if you will, on the outer ring of the donut, people who are actually contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Who are experienced individuals who, for one reason or another, they just don't want to get dressed up and go down to Midtown.
Right, they want a more flexible schedule.
Yeah. So many of them are working at a flexible office environments. A lot of them have young families. They're all extremely experienced. Some of them are sort of frustrated freelancers, and the reason I say frustrated is because before they left the corporate career, they were managing huge accounts and large teams,
right?
Which is a great skill set that you really don't get to leverage when you're working by yourself from home.
Right.
So what we do is we pull these people together into teams, and they work either as an account person, a strategist, a writer, an analyst relations person, and they can collaborate with one another. And so the center of the donut provides the support and services to these people on the outer edge of the donut.
Yeah, we had on recently the COO of MomCorps, and there it's just a big pile of moms that were corporate executives that just wanted to stay at home with their kid, and they were looking for those kind of opportunities.
Yeah, and actually of our 20 people, just three are guys. The rest of them are ladies that are superstars.
Right, and so you're not promising them any regular income. You're just, they're there like whenever you need them?
It's kind of a regular gig. It's as close to a job as you can get without it being a full-time job itself. They tell us how many hours they have to give. Sometimes it is 40 hours a week. Sometimes it's 40 hours a month.
Uh-huh.
And regardless of what they have, we take advantage of their ability, and we put them in a team, and they provide those services within their own flexible context.
So tell us about the name.
Carabiner, for yes. those of you that are listening and don't know, is that sort of C-shaped metal clip that has sort of become a keychain, but originally developed as a sort of mountaineering device that allowed you to quickly connect ropes together. They can support a tremendous amount of weight, and you rely upon them to be safe. But the main utility is that they're a great quick connector, which we thought was a good name for our company, since what we do is help small high-tech startups connect quickly through the media and industry analysts to their customer base.
How have you seen the relationship between a client and a PR agency and the media change over the years?
It used to be, when I started in the mid-80s, there wasn't a lot going on in sort of computer journalism. Those were very much the early days, and the magazines relied heavily upon PR firms and upon computer manufacturers to supply stories. It's a much more sophisticated environment now. There's a tremendous amount of competition. If you're a startup, maybe venture-funded, and you want to get the word out, there's just such a tremendous amount of noise out there that you're just not going to get heard. The success stories that you hear about with Apple or with Netscape and even Google sort of coming from nowhere. Who heard of Google 5 years ago?
Right.
All of a sudden, it's all you hear about now. But sort of going from nowhere to somewhere, it's pretty difficult. So this relationship that PR firms have with journalists is kind of an important one.
How do you see blogging in the equation of your media mix?
Well, blogging is interesting, difficult for many of our clients to do, particularly if there's a CEO who's come from a larger environment. Andy mentioned a career at AT&T. You sort of have a hard time imagining a former AT&T executive blogging at all. Much of their training is designed to sort of keep secrets away, if you will, from the media or from the general public. But a small company with a young entrepreneur might be very happy to share thoughts and ideas in order to build a community and potentially reach prospects.
Right. I'm not talking about the company itself blogging, but the relationship with influential bloggers, like the Michael Arringtons or...
Yeah, that's become very important. In fact, we look at them in pretty much the same way that we look at media and analysts. They're people with important opinions. They have an audience. They're an influencer. And our clients need to be able to connect with them.
But how do you, as an agency, connect with them?
Well, we offer up our clients, of course, to them as commentators on topics that are of significant. It's you can't really pitch a blogger. It's not the appropriate thing to do. They see themselves, of course, in a little different light than a reporter or a magazine. But they are interested still in building relationships with people that can provide value to the people that follow them. So we help our clients develop relationships with important bloggers. We help them identify. Monitoring is an important part of that process.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be able to keep up with what's being said.
What do you think are the three key ingredients to a company's reputation in trying to build that through the social network and internet?
the first key ingredient for reputation, of course, is actually to create one. You know, you go from absolutely nothing to something. Identifying the right people to talk to is very important there. A little bit of research is required. If you're a small high-tech startup, you need to figure out who in the blogosphere and who in the media and analyst community actually speaks to your customer base or to your prospects. And once you've identified them, you need some sort of opening. So a compelling story, you need to position yourself, do some messaging, and then find a creative way to capture the attention of the media, the blogger, and then make your approach. Once you've caught the attention, then it's important to have the ability to provide information that's of value on a continuing basis. It can't be about me, me, me. I often use the analogy of if you've had a date or if you have a wife, you can't always go out to dinner and talk about yourself all the time, and that seems to be what a lot of companies want to do.
Unless you're, like, famous.
Yeah, I work. Guess if you're Donald Trump, you could get away with
that. He probably does that.
Yeah, no, let's talk
I
about
bet
me.
He does. How do you feel about me?
Aren't I great? When a person engages with a PR agency as opposed to like an advertising agency, PR, I think, is more powerful because when the reader is reading it or viewing it, they see it as a kind of a more – it's not a pitch. It's just information coming from a theoretically unbiased source.
Yeah.
Where advertising obviously is a paid medium.
Yeah.
So, but on the other side of that, PR is kind of unpredictable. Like somebody can invest money in a PR agency – and you can be sending out all this stuff and not get traction or not get picked up by a variety of, magazines or newspapers or anything like that.
Very true. And that does happen all the time. There is intense competition to be able to get in the pages of a story. But generally, if you hire a firm within 3 months or so, if you're not getting traction, you know you've probably not made the right choice.
Is that how PR firms differentiate each other from each other? Is that the connections they have with the media? Is that one of the?
That's one of the important points that we make. But no good PR firm is going to be able to continue in business without great contacts. You know, I'm not saying all of them have great contacts, but most of them probably do.
Mm-hmm.
The real point of differentiation comes in the sort of experience base of the staff who's really doing the pitching for you. If you go to a firm and it's a bright young person who may be extremely intelligent and good-looking doing your work, and that's the business model in a lot of the firms, is they'll have the junior staff doing your pitching for you. And to some extent, that might be successful, but wouldn't you rather have somebody that's been doing that for 10 or 15 years?
Right. How involved are you in the actual, like, you meet with a client. Look, can you take us through what happens, like, somebody engages with you guys. You meet with them, I guess. You do research on them to really understand the personality of the firm that you're working with?
Yes, and because technology is involved, we have to do a deep dive so that we understand their technology. To some extent, we're kind of nerdy in terms of PR people. Once we understand their story, we help them with positioning. A lot of times they're engineers. They're not really sure how to describe their technology in a way that grabs people's attention.
And so you got to put it in English?
Yeah.
That's part of your responsibility?
Put it into attractive English.
Translator.
Uh-huh. And then we make the pitch as compelling as we can possibly make it. And we tell them all the time, if you want to successfully pitch and get stories, you have to envision the story being a three-legged stool. At least we feel that that's what journalists do, where one of the legs of the stool is a compelling story that's appropriately messaged, but the other two legs are credibility legs because a journalist is sort of taught not to believe you. So one of the legs is a customer that's also willing to verify, I use this product and it's pretty good. And the other is some other source of credibility. Often it's an industry analyst. It can be a blogger.
Mm-hmm.
But who has been briefed and has developed an opinion. So if you go to the journalist with all three legs on that stool, generally you're going to get the article that you want.
And when can you talk about a success story that you guys had?
Well, that put me on the spot here.
Yeah. You said I could ask you anything. Okay. So that was part of the ground rules.
Should have told you. I've been better prepared. On a regular basis, actually on a monthly basis, we're delivering extensive clip reports to our clients. But I think if I was going to highlight a particular instance, it would be for one of our clients named Wren, WREN. They do surveillance systems that tie into retail cash registers, if you will.
Mm.
They're involved in loss prevention, not just in security.
With employees, you mean?
Well, unfortunately, that's where a lot of loss takes place, is you'll get somebody maybe pulling something over the scan reader, but covering the barcode with their hand and slipping it right into a friend's sack. And
right.
There's a lot of tricks that are used, unfortunately, with retail theft. It's a $32 billion a year problem.
Wow.
Yeah, all of it coming in.
So you learned that while researching Ren, right?
That's right. That's a pitch point. And we've been very successful placing user stories for them, and they've basically gone from a company that wasn't particularly well-known in their niche to now having some very large clients within that space.
Wow, that's a great success story. Yeah. How long did that process take? How long did you work with them?
It took us about 6 months before we were really getting the kind of traction that we wanted. After a year, they were being sort of requested, if you will, for their executives to speak at conferences and for bylined articles from their client base, and to the point now where it's a very healthy, robust, ongoing publicity campaign.
Do you work with them in that area also? Or
yeah.
Does it start out like initially just with media and then it starts becoming speaking, or is everything all at one time?
It's kind of budget-based. If the client wants to really move quicker, media is sort of the base level that everybody wants, but if they've got enough budget and they can move fast, we'll layer on executive speaking, because visibility within a marketplace is important. And we feel that sort of having multiple touches, if you will, often if you go to a conference, you're going to have face-to-face with your prospects, and you can make a more compelling argument when you're looking at somebody face-to-face.
And if you're speaking, you're positioned as the expert, so people are looking at you in a different way than just an attendee.
And it's a snowball. Once you've been accepted as a speaker, say at a regional conference, then you can pitch yourself at a national conference and eventually be speaking internationally.
Peter, where do you see yourself in 5 years?
I'd love what I'm doing now, so if I'm still doing this, I'd be very happy.
So you like the, but you want to keep the same concept, right? You never see yourself going back to one of those big firms in a big office with large overhead?
Absolutely not. I've been asked that many times. To me, it doesn't work. I think we'll see more companies going with this hybrid model that I've talked about. It's hard to deliver when you don't have some sort of full-time regular support, but that doesn't need to get burdensome and heavy. The real expertise is developed by people that, you know, they have a tremendous amount of experience. They really want flexibility in their life.
Do you think that model would work in other industries other than PR and advertising?
I could see it working well in sort of the delivery of legal services,
mm-hmm.
probably
mm-hmm.
accounting services. There are a number of industries. I imagine that it'll probably ripple through the PR world pretty quick over the next 5 years.
Well, why do you think larger companies feel uncomfortable having virtual staff?
There's a management style. I think there's a little trust issue, unfortunately.
Right.
You know, when you're paying somebody a salary, you feel somehow that you want to be able to pop in their office and see if they're working. You don't want
maybe
to
a webcam.
Lurk somehow and make sure they're working.
GPS, you know, one of those bracelets for your ankles.
It's a bit like the bionic woman with implants. But there's nothing more liberating than knowing that the person that's providing the work for you is doing that because they're highly motivated.
Right.
Right,
yeah.
And that they're enjoying it, and it's really on their terms and their time frame as well,
and
yours.
And all you care about is the work gets done. I mean, you
exactly.
don't care the time they do it or... Right, like you don't care if they're working at 3 in the morning or, you know,
or
10
from,
in the morning.
Or from where. You know, it could be from the beach or from an African
right.
safari.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
Right, with, you know, cell phones and BlackBerries and email.
There really is no virtual anymore, and that's one of the reasons we refer to that as the V word. Now, it suggests that there's not any real substance there, but our experience has been that, you know, the results that we deliver are actually more concrete. Clients are happier than they ever were in my sort of previous brick-and-mortar world.
Do the clients care?
No, they don't. Absolutely don't.
Do they even know?
Some of them don't know.
Yeah.
It is so transparent. The delivery is probably more. There's a higher quality there. They have better relationships.
Better service because
absolutely
they're getting
service.
More touches at a variety of times
yeah.
rather than...
And you got to look at it this way. They're not dealing... Say they're dealing with a team leader in a traditional environment whose son is sick. You know, how much attention are they going to get from that individual? But if that mom is able to take care of that child at home and be there and still do some work, the level of contentment is just exponentially higher. The work's going to be better.
And from both people, from the worker and the client standpoint.
Absolutely.
The client won't even notice, and the worker's going to be happy because they fit their work seamlessly into their day.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. And when I started it 3 years ago...
Did people think you're nuts?
They did. I thought I was a little bit nuts, to be honest with you. My main reason was to just reduce overhead. I wasn't really sure the dynamics would mesh together, but
right.
I've been actually surprised at how much better of a model this is and how much happier our clients have been and how much happier our people are.
What about you personally?
I couldn't be more thrilled. I still have some young children. I have 6 kids, actually.
Wow.
My oldest is 25, but my youngest is 9, so I have this sort of two families, if you will, two little Chinese girls that we adopted. And I love it when they come home.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you can stop your day, be with them.
They come in, give me a peck on the cheek, take a couple of jelly beans out of the jar, and then they're on to their homework.
Love that.
It's a great interlude.
Love that. Peter, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us today. Your business is exciting, and how can people reach you?
Probably the best way would actually be by email. That's the ultimate nerd address, pbaron, B-A-R-O-N, at carabinerpr.com. That's carabinerpr.com. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Great show, Amy. Nice job. You were awesome.
No, Peter was awesome, and Andy's awesome. The show is about them. It's been great learning about all these different tools, though, as well. It's kind of interesting how much things have evolved just in the last 5 years. I mean, the blogging and, I mean, the podcasting,
sure.
like we're doing right now. Just the information that's out there is, some of it's not so good, but a lot of it is wonderful, especially for the active mind.
Yeah,
Are you signing out here?
That's your job.
Meanwhile, the doctor's over here running the soundboard. I think he's shopping. I saw him, like, looking at blue jeans a little bit ago, so we better wake him up. This is Amy Otto and Lee Kanner for Atlanta Business Radio. Thank you for listening.